You know, first before I get started, I just want to share a little something that God's just been kind of telling me that it would be nice to share. I am so comfortable around you ladies. I feel just like, I don't know, we're friends. I don't know all of you, but there's something about the ladies of Athey Creek that are just very special. When I was a young girl out of high school, I went to work as a typist in an office, and that's where I learned to gossip. Ladies usually gossip when they get together. That's just what we did, and I got pretty good at it. Shame to say, but I did. That's just what you did. That's you get together, a bunch of ladies. But when you come here, especially on Tuesdays, we come together to pray for one another. We come together to lift each other up, to come alongside, and we talk about Jesus. We fellowship. There's no gossip. It's just a blessing. And I just wanted to tell you that to you ladies this morning, because it's just, I am blessed to be a part of this fellowship. So, and there's a couple things I wanted to say from last week. Or a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was. So, and I wrote it down because I don't remember very well. Okay. I want to thank all of you ladies, kind, gracious, all. Okay, let's start over again. I want to thank you all for kind and gracious response to the first half of my story. The enemy has also responded, and he's not been so kind. One of you said to me, "You're such a good writer, you should write a book." I gave kind of a flippant answer because I was nervous. Sorry about that. I don't handle compliments very well about my writing. I feel like an imposter. I being able to write it all is an amazing gift from God. Another of you asked if my story had a happy ending. Of course it does. I'm not allowed to read the last page. Only God knows what's written there. I do know, however, that being a child of God, there is a happily ever after in heaven. Secondly, I'm not sure that you understood that I was part of those adopted children, those four adopted children in the first half of my story. I was, in fact, the oldest. I was 18 when I decided I wanted to be a permanent part of this family. My middle sister had already been adopted. I asked them if they would adopt me too. The proceedings started immediately. I went from Conklin to Smith to Peters in a space of 3 years. I gained a new brother and a sister. This adopted sister is very precious to me, and we have become very close over the years as we are spiritually connected. My middle sister went to be with the Lord 2 years ago. She and my mom are together now, arm in arm with Jesus. And so now I'll continue. Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. Isaiah 43. When last we met, I was beginning to tell you about my third major depression. You heard me cry out to God, "Is this to be the pattern of my life?" Well, it would be for a while, until I learned the valuable lessons that God wanted to teach me. I thought now that I knew Jesus and was born again, life was going to be a piece of cake. I could have my cake and eat it too. There would be no more depressions, and I would be a better wife and mother. Surprise, doesn't work that way. As I'm sure you all know, taking up one's cross and following in Jesus' footsteps is not for sissies. It's hard work. It took me a long time to learn this. Years. God is such a good teacher, though, and so patient. Good thing I was a slow learner. It was so very hard when I got pregnant with our last child. All I could think of was more sleepless nights and the loss of the newfound freedom that I had just begun to enjoy. Baby brother was in school. I was free at last. Now I would have to begin again from the start. No, I did not want to start over. Selfish thoughts, I know, but they were constantly filling my mind. To top it off, the pregnancy was difficult. My blood pressure rose and I was put on meds, and as I told you earlier, I was bedridden the last 2 months. When I went into labor, a very concerned doctor was right there by my side. The trauma of this pregnancy and a hysterectomy that followed shortly after left me an emotional wreck. Because of all this and my mindset, it was given that I would eventually fall into depression. Having tasted freedom, I wanted more and was not willing to wait for this little one to grow up. I had continued my friendship with my foster sister even though I was no longer going to prayer meetings. It was a friendship destined for failure. We used each other for our own selfish needs. When I would feel overwhelmed, I would tell hubby, "I really need to get away for a while." I never bothered to think of the hardship it would cause anyone. Off I would go to her house, we would go shopping, out to dinner, and sometimes even to the coast for a couple of days. On her part, she wanted companionship and someone to have fun with. She should have told me to stay home and take care of my family, but she had spiritual and emotional problems of her own that she had never dealt with, the blind leading the blind. My marriage suffered, and I know my little one did. Through most of this time, I was seeing a Christian counselor at $60 an hour. There were times I would see him several times a week. That was a lot of money we really couldn't afford. I didn't know where else to turn. I was so unhappy and constantly in tears. Hubby didn't know what to do with me, poor guy. I certainly was not spiritually discerning at this time because this counselor gave a lot of advice that was not biblical. I was going nowhere but in the wrong direction. Eventually, I quit seeing him. Soon, all this freedom began to lose its luster. Deep down inside, I knew I needed to get back to the business of being a wife and mother. How to begin? I was not content. I struggled daily. I was always looking for another counselor, someone who could perform magic and take away all my problems so life would be perfect and I would be happy. Every time things would go wrong, which they often did because of my selfishness, I would start searching again. My search eventually led me to a woman counselor. Surely she could help me. She was a woman. She would understand me. She was very nice. I saw her twice, and then I thank God just had had enough. When are you going to learn, child? I am your counselor. I did not promise you paradise on earth. When you belong to me, life is going to be hard. Trust me. I kept seeing my foster sister. Our relationship had become strained. It was my fault just as much as hers. If a friendship isn't blessed by God, it will go nowhere and might even be dangerous. I could have so easily ruined my marriage. God needed to work in each of us separately, and he did. Over the years, we would see each other occasionally, but never again did I go and stay with her for days. I spent my time at home, busily mending fences. My foster sister has been gone now for many years, but God has allowed a friendship to continue with her children. This has been a blessing. Wonderful counselor, that's who I turn to now. And I have never had another serious bout of depression. There are times when I look back at my life and see the mistakes I have made, mistakes and selfish behavior that in ways affect my children today. This can so easily turn into a pity party, but I won't go there anymore. Why give the enemy an inch so he can take a mile? I did the best I knew how in those days. When one doesn't have an intimate relationship with God, life will be harder than it should be. One thing I know for sure, God will take care of my children. He will make something beautiful out of the ashes of my mistakes. I have given each child into his tender care. I know he has his hand on them. Life continued on the old farm, but nothing lasts forever. Certainly not an 83-year-old farmhouse. This old house had been a shelter from the storms of life for so many. It had been a witness to birth and death, happiness and sorrow. Laughter and tears. If this old house would have been able to speak, what amazing stories it would have told. We would be part of those stories. We had lived in it for 20 years. Sadly, this faithful old shelter was falling apart. Could we fix it up and bring it back to its former glory? We thought about it, but in the end, hubby decided it would take too much fixing. We needed a brand new house. There was one problem, though. A big red barn standing where he wanted to put the new house. The barn would have to come down. That old barn, it had been there since hubby was a little whippersnapper. Then it housed large bins for the wheat after it was harvested, among the other things. As our kids were growing up, it was a good place to play on rainy days. They would play there for hours, making tunnels through the straw. There were also shenanigans that I did not hear about until after they were grown. Some were heart stoppers. Hubby has told me about some of his shenanigans as well. Guess the kids came by their mischievous behavior naturally. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Well, after much hard work, down the barn came, and most of the wood went into our new house. First, we had to dig a basement. Progress was slow. Hubby didn't neglect his other work. He did promise me, though, once it was started in earnest, we would be in it by Christmas. I was so excited. Sadly, that didn't happen. I can remember after he told me it couldn't be done. I stood in the bare bones of the house, looking out of a large square hole that one day would be a window, and I bawled like a baby. At last, our new house was ready for the finish work. Bright colors were very popular at that time, and I went a little crazy. Anyone know what it's like to live in a pumpkin? I do. We had burnt orange carpet, orange linoleum, and orange countertops. What was I thinking? I wasn't Cinderella. What did I need with a pumpkin? At first, when everything was new, I thought it was pretty, sorta. And it certainly was bright. I wish someone had told me how quickly I would tire of all that orange cheerfulness. I felt that I was doomed to live in this pumpkin forever. Not so. You are going to be surprised how I got rid of all that orange, and it didn't take a magic wand. It was the middle of winter, and we were locked in a deep freeze. That year, it snowed a lot, and temperatures dropped below freezing. Hardly anyone came down our road, even though it was the main road at that time. It was very hard to navigate. It was like a sheet of ice. We hadn't ventured out for days. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and our youngest daughter was at the fridge getting a glass of milk when we heard this loud roar and the house shook. She dropped the milk and ran screaming to the living room. Hubby thought a plane had hit the house. I ran to the kitchen window. There is a car out there, and it's backwards, and I can see the taillights. No way, said Hubby as he hurried out the door. Call the police. He met a woman coming around the front of the house. Woman, what on earth have you done? All she could say was, can I use your bathroom? When the police arrived, they just stood there scratching their heads. How could a car possibly hit this house? It's too far from the road. Soon, we found out she had been drinking. Only a couple of glasses of wine, she said, as they made her count backwards and try to walk a straight line right there in our orange living room. I felt a little sorry for her. They hauled her away in handcuffs. How could this woman have possibly hit our house? That was the million-dollar question. Our thinking was that because of her drinking, she lost control, the car flipped around, she somehow switched gears, and with her foot on the gas, she flew across our fields backwards, smashing into our house. She had traveled about 100 yards before impact. Damage to the side of the house was bad, and she had sheared off my beautiful mimosa tree. It wasn't very big at the time. The best part, however, was the damage done to the kitchen. I just smiled. I couldn't wait to call our insurance rep the next day. I was very conservative with the next colors I picked. It took a while to talk Hubby into getting rid of the burnt orange carpet. The damage hadn't gone quite that far. I didn't give up, though, until he gave in. I could finally say goodbye to my pumpkin. It takes a lot of money to raise a family, and ours was growing by leaps and bounds. Hubby was a carpenter by trade, and when we moved to the old farmhouse, he added farming as his second job. He worked 6 days a week and many a night until midnight. He would come home from work, eat dinner, and head to the fields. These years were hard years for both of us. Taking care of the kids was left to me, and our first three were so close together it was like having triplets. My days were almost as long as Hubby's. How our kids could get dirty. Every night was bath night. All three would climb into that giant tub at once, and then it was somewhat akin to Noah's flood, water everywhere. I was with child most of the time in those early years and bone weary by the end of the day. I would be in bed and fast asleep before hubby was out of the field. When the kids were growing up, I did a lot of sewing. Took after my mom in that department. She was more practical than I was, however. She sewed on patches, not me. The iron-on patch was a godsend, especially with all those boys. They didn't look as nice, but that didn't bother me. In the summer, I would sew up boxer shorts by the dozen. That's all the boys wore, along with buzz cuts and dirt, lots of dirt. Once in a while, hubby and I would be invited out. Of course, I just had to have a new dress for the occasion. So what if I only had a day to sew it up? I would pile the kids in the car and away to town we would go. I would pick out a pattern, some material, and literally fly home. What's the hurry, Mom? Never mind, just go out and play. I would cut out the dress and the sewing machine would go nonstop except when I ran out to check on the kids. What are you doing and are you being good? Of course they would say yes. On those days, I didn't bother to check. I was way too busy. Back in the house I flew, passing a sink full of dirty dishes, almost tripping over the basket of dirty clothes. Didn't see any of it. There was only one thing on my mind, my new dress. That evening, as we headed out the door, past the basket of dirty clothes, hubby would say, is that a new dress? Why, yes, it is. Do you like it? Hubby decided all work and no play made a man dull. He needed a hobby. Our neighbors down the road had bees. Hubby said, I can do that, and so he did. When our neighbors' bees would swarm, he would gather them up and give them to hubby. It wasn't long when we had our own bee colonies. Now, hubby, he does things right. He wanted to look like a bee man as well as be a bee man. He had the white overalls, the big hat with the netting, gloves that fit up to his elbows, and bands to fit around the bottom of his pants to keep the bees from finding a way in. When he would put on all his paraphernalia, he looked magnificent. I would render the honey, picking out the dead bees, and sometimes we would just suck the honey right out of the comb. We had our own promised land right there on the farm, flowing with milk and honey. We were blessed. On cold winter mornings when it would freeze outside, I did not want to get out of bed. No one did. There would be icicles on the inside of our kitchen windows, and when we spoke, our breath just hung there in the cold, frigid air. That old trash burner came in handy on those cold winter days. When the weather was really bad, well below freezing, we would sleep in the living room with our tiny little heater. We would haul out the mattresses, lots of blankets, close the doors, and have a slumber party. The kids loved it. Mom and Dad, not so much. Never did like sleeping on the floor. It seems back then we had many more snow days. When this would happen, I would holler up the stairs. Hey kids, it's snowing, no school. You get to bug your mama all day. As I was waiting for the kids to tumble downstairs, I would think back to my snow days. There I was sitting in my classroom. My mind was not on schoolwork, but on the snow falling outside the window. Surely there won't be school tomorrow. They might even let us out early if it keeps up. I loved snow days. Of course, I loved anything that kept me out of school. My playmates and I would play all day. We would take small breaks to check in at home, thaw out for our frozen toes and fingers and guzzle down some hot chocolate for fuel. Then it was off again, playing till supper time. Daydreaming over, the kids are up wanting their breakfast. Hubby is done with his, no work for him today. He is out in the shop, busy creating a sleigh out of leftover bits and pieces of wood. Soon we would hear the sound of the tractor, sled attached, kids bundled up, hardly able to walk. Snow day had begun. I would stay in the house, ready to thaw out frozen fingers and kiss shiny red noses, a large pot of cocoa waiting on the stove. In those days, we were never out of cocoa. I had a recipe that made up a large batch. All you needed to do was add hot water. Of course, the door was constantly opening and closing, letting in the frigid air, and I was continually mopping up melting snow as the kids were in and out. They didn't have a problem sleeping when nighttime had finally arrived. Neither did Mom. Our first child was a boy. That's what I had always prayed for. I knew zilch about parenting, and it was on-the-job training for me. It was no different for hubby. Even though he came from a large family, he didn't know how to deal with babies. He had older sisters that did that. When baby was brand new, hubby decided he wanted to help. He could see how tired I was. One night he told me, "You just stay in bed and sleep. I'll take care of the next feeding." "Okay, honey," as I sleepily turned over. All of a sudden, from the other room, I heard a desperate cry for help. "Mommy!" Baby was a mess from head to toe, literally. Don't remember how much skin it up on hubby, but that was the end of my midnight help. Our second child, a boy, was an early riser. 4 a.m. would roll around and he would be wide awake. He was ready to get up. Wasn't anybody listening? You know, come to think of it, this boy, who is now a man, works for waste management and has to get up in the wee hours of the morning. I guess he was just practicing. As time went on, he got a little bolder and started climbing out of his crib. We put on extensions. That didn't stop him. He climbed over those too. When he was old enough to play outside, he would park his trike up against the backyard fence and climb over that. He never went anywhere. I thought to myself, why go through all the trouble of climbing over the fence if you aren't going to go anywhere? He stayed close to home for a very long time. In fact, I was beginning to think we might have a permanent residence. But at the age of 29, he married a cute little redhead and left home. Our third child, another boy, didn't walk till he was 17 months old. No kidding. By that time, I was pregnant with our fourth. I was getting really tired of hauling that kid around. One day I said, "What the heck," and turned him loose outside. His little jeans got holes in the knees and the toes of his shoes wore out. That's okay. He was happy and so was I. I also got lots of practice ironing on his knee patches. Soon after this child finally learned to walk, we had the big storm. October 12, 1962. Winds over 100 miles per hour. Oregon was hit the hardest. I'll never forget it. I don't remember when the winds hit. I just remember trying not to let the kids see my fear. It was Friday, so hubby was at work. As the day progressed, so did the winds. The kids and I were huddled together by the window in our living room when suddenly the top pane was sucked out and we watched our giant cherry tree topple over. I was praying like crazy. I didn't know it, but hubby was trying desperately to get home. One way was blocked. He had to turn around and head a different way. Thinking back, it was so dangerous for him to even be out in the storm. God did get him home safely, and I heaved a sigh of relief. I was so glad to see him. Now everything would be okay. Our neighbors down the road had a dairy herd. With no electricity, the cows would have to be milked by hand. They would need hubby's help. By evening, the storm had spent its fury. We had no idea as yet how much damage had been done. We put the kids in their PJs and headed for the neighbors. We spent the night. I remember looking out the window after the kids were settled down. I had never seen the night so black, not a light anywhere. It was a little eerie. I wondered how long we would be without electricity. Turns out, about a week. Many were out much longer. The three boys were still in diapers, no Pampers. Washboards in rough red hands, don't remember the rest. We survived, but there were people that didn't. The next day was beautiful. Blue skies and a peaceful calm welcomed us to the storm's damage. It was devastating almost everywhere. We had little damage on the farm. Some big doors flew off our outbuildings, and of course our window and cherry tree were gone. Nothing compared to what many others suffered. God had kept us in the eye of the storm. 2 months after the big storm, our fourth child, another boy, was born. I was having hard pains on my birthday, the 17th. I was so sure by the end of the day he would arrive, but no. He wanted his own day, and on the 19th, he finally showed up. This was the first and only time I had my Christmas shopping done early. It was a challenge keeping things hidden from curious little eyes. My folks had a tradition that we were very much a part of: midnight mass, then over to grandma's house for moose milk, followed by breakfast, piano music, and Christmas carols. Now I know what you're thinking. What's moose milk? Did they have a moose hidden somewhere, and did they actually milk it? No. It was grandpa's concoction, kind of a hybrid eggnog, full of whipped cream and liquor. Of course, there was a tendency for some to overindulge in food and drink. After all, it was Christmas. Hubby and the kids went to Grandma's without me that year. I stayed home with my little Christmas present, and we celebrated together, just the two of us. That was to be the end of our midnight mass and eggnog tradition. Our family was getting too big, and let's face it, getting all those kids ready and out the door at midnight was not my idea of fun and games. We started our own traditions, minus the moose milk. Didn't have any place to hide the moose. Kidding. There comes a time in every family's life when new traditions need to be made. It's hard, and sometimes kids fight it tooth and nail, some parents as well. I have always encouraged my kids that when it was time, they needed to start their own traditions and make their own memories. The fifth child, yes, another boy, caught on early to how to fly the coop. He wasn't sticking around in this barnyard. Too much to see on the other side of the fence. One day, I got a phone call from my sister-in-law up the road. Are you missing a kid? She kept hearing this squeaky noise and decided to investigate. There he was, pedaling his tricycle as fast as his little legs could go up the side of a very busy road. He wanted to see the world. He should have oiled his wheels before he took off. Thinking back on those years when the kids were growing up, I'm sure the angels were doing double duty every day on the Peters farm. Our sixth child was a girl, my sweet little Valentine. Remember her? Well, after her, we had our last boy, our seventh child. Remember those matchbox cars? They were his favorite toy. He had a bunch. Hubby had made the kids a sandbox that resembled a picnic table. This little guy would play there for hours with his tiny cars, happy and contented. That is, until Big Sister, not so sweet anymore, would get in an ornery mood and start to pick on him. I guess she was tired of being picked on by her older brothers. She needed someone who wouldn't fight back. Most of the time, they got along quite well. Between our seventh and eighth child, I had my second miscarriage. There was a time in the earlier part of my marriage that my rebellious nature started to cause some trouble. I no longer went to bed before hubby. I became a night owl. The kids were in bed by eight. It was so much easier mopping floors without them underfoot. I would zip through the house, and in no time it was clean and ready for the tornado that would hit the next day, leaving wreckage in its wake. In the summer, I would hang my washout after dark. It was so much cooler then. Yes, I did occasionally use a clothesline. I would open doors and windows to the cool night breeze. The crickets would serenade me as I sat by the big kitchen table snapping beans, shelling peas, or cutting corn off the cob. Whatever was in season at the time. In those days, I canned everything I could get my hands on, most of it coming from our large garden. Sometimes, though, I would just bury my nose in a good book and read till the wee hours of the morning. 6 a.m. came around way too fast. Is it any wonder I could not drag myself out of bed? Yes, working the night shift brought on a few problems, to say the least. Hubby could not get me out of bed in the morning. He would rise at the sound of the alarm, go out and do his chores, come back, and you guessed it, I was still in bed. This, of course, made for a very stressful morning. Coffee wasn't made, neither was breakfast or lunches. I was grumpy. He was less than pleased. This went on for some time. At the same time, in those early days, I would escape for a weekend retreat. I thought of these as a vacation, not particularly as a time for spiritual renewal. A little holiness would rub off on me from time to time, but that would only last until I got home and opened the door. Nothing had changed. I was the same old me with the same old problems. Hubby would just look at me with relief in his eyes. Boy, am I glad you're home. One retreat was different. I don't remember what it was all about. I only know I made a resolution to get up in the morning when the alarm went off. Deep in my heart, I knew I was causing turmoil in my marriage by this act of disobedience. It stuck. From that time on, I was the first one up. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't all of a sudden this perfect wife. Not by a long shot, but things went a lot smoother from then on, and hubby was a happy man. Time went swiftly by. Baby followed baby, and our family was complete. Then it was just keeping my sanity until the nest was empty. Sad to say, I was in a big hurry for that to happen. Do I regret that? Yes. I have permission to share this little part of the story. Like me, baby girl met the love of her life while in high school. He joined the Navy right out of graduation and was stationed in Hawaii. Now, who wouldn't want to live in Hawaii? When they decided to marry that summer, hubby would not give them his blessing. "You're way too young," he told them. "Wait." They went ahead anyway. I didn't back hubby up as I should have. That empty nest, remember? That's all I could think of. I paid a price for my selfishness. So did she. Those years the kids spent so far from home and family were extremely hard. If God hadn't been watching over them, I'm sure they would not have made it. Married life is hard enough without starting off on the wrong foot. But these kids have worked hard at their marriage, and this July, they will have been married 21 years. Through all this time, I was not going to church. No wonder life was hard. I was wandering in the wilderness, one of my own making. I wandered there for a good many years. My leaving the Catholic Church had been so hard on my husband that I didn't want to cause him any more anxiety, so I didn't try finding a new church. I wouldn't have known what to look for anyway. It was easier to just stay home. I was familiar with the Bible from the prayer meetings, but I didn't really understand it and didn't study it like I should have. I would pray sometimes, but I didn't have a prayer life. My special times with the Lord were few and far between. I needed Christian fellowship so badly and didn't know it. I really thought I was okay, but in truth, I wasn't. I don't know how long I wandered in this wilderness, but I'm thinking a good 20 years. My girls started going to a Bible church in Forest Grove and invited me to come. Excuse me. One Sunday, I got brave and went. It felt good to finally have a place to worship, but sadly, error and sin entered in, and we found ourselves without a shepherd. We got a new shepherd, and things seemed to be running smoothly at first, but error and strife began to creep in, and soon it was time to move on. There were other churches in the area, but I didn't feel led to go to any of them. Again, I was without fellowship. I knew I needed a good Bible-based church, but didn't know where to find one. Well, God came through, as he always does. He brought me to Athey. No more wandering in the wilderness. The years flew by, and all of a sudden, it was time for hubby to retire. Oh no, he's going to be underfoot constantly and the TV on 24/7. Was I going to survive? I needed space. I didn't watch TV like hubby. What was I to do? I gave hubby the living room with a giant TV, and I made the girls' old bedroom into my space. Hubby is welcome anytime. I do have a TV in my room, but it's seldom on. Some of you might think it's strange to have separate rooms, but we are both comfortable with it. Hubby has worn a path down the hallway to visit me. He likes to pick up little dust bunnies along the way. He swears they are full of my white hair. "Honey," he says, "I'm surprised you have a hair left on your head." He thinks he's pretty funny. And he is. He then informs me of the weather and how much rain we have had, inch by inch. Yes, I have my own private weatherman. He is also a sportscaster and tells me how his team is doing, what the score is, and how many records so-and-so has made. I'm not a sports fan. He's also my anchor man. Whatever happens that is the least bit exciting on any of his programs, I'm the first to know. When this arrangement was new, my ugly sin nature started showing up. I would get irritated, especially after the third or fourth visit. "Really?" I would say. "Do I need to know that?" Sadly, most of the time I wasn't joking. Finally, God got through to me and showed me that this behavior was not pleasing to him. I was acting smug and superior and not honoring my husband. Ouch. Now I can truthfully say, I no longer act that way. I look up when he comes into the room and I listen and respond. Of course, that old sin nature will poke its head up now and then, and I will have to bite my tongue, but that's happening less and less. I'm learning what a blessing it is to have a husband that wants to share his days and thoughts with me. Who is this man I call hubby? This very special gift from God. I have had members of his family tell me that I got the best of the bunch. Of course, I knew that already. He is the seventh child born in a family of 13. There were 6 girls and 7 boys. A boy and a girl didn't make it to adulthood. The girl was killed in a horrible accident. One of her brothers was with her when it happened. The little boy died in his mother's arms when he was 2. I can't imagine the pain, can you? My hubby's mom, what a dear woman she was, and she loved her children. She always wanted more. Up to the last one, she wanted twins. Can you imagine? 13 kids, and she still wanted twins. Hubby learned to work at a very early age. All the children did. In the summer, they worked the hardest, boys doing men's work, girls helping with the younger kids, as well as cooking for family and hired help. The kitchen was a busy place all day. When one meal was done, they started on the next, sit-down meals, no less, with all the trimmings. The work never seemed to be done. With such a large family, the older boys slept in a bunkhouse. That made room for the younger boys to sleep in the house. Hubby and two of his brothers slept together in one bed. If one had an accident, they all felt the results. I can't imagine what wash day was like. Mine was bad enough. It was not all work and no play, however, at least for Hubby and his younger siblings. I have heard many a story of the mischief these boys got into. Many a trip was made to the woodshed and then off to bed without supper. I just have to tell you one of these stories. It makes me giggle every time I think of it. After wheat harvest and things had slowed down a little, the older boys would put the grain in burlap bags, sew them up, and stamp their dad's name on them and get them ready for sale. One night when Mom was bathing Hubby and his younger siblings in that giant tub we inherited, she noticed something on one of the little bottoms. It seems that someone had stamped A.W. Peters on it, as bold as you please, with indelible ink, no less. Do you wonder who the perpetrator was? Hubby was the oldest of the three younger boys. Need I say more? By the way, no matter how much mischief they got into, if they were sent to bed without supper, their kind-hearted mother would bring them something to eat. They never went to sleep hungry. Hubby has slowed down so much these past few years. He finally retired from farming when he was about 75. Well, almost. He helps the boys out occasionally. He is in the house a lot more now and has started to help me, sweeping floors and whatever else I might ask him to do. He does it willingly and never complains. Not so with me. I'm a complainer, and I always find fault with something. I remember one day going into the bedroom. Hubby had made the bed. Not like I would do it, of course. In the closet hung his clothes, all cattywampus, ready to fall off the hanger. Why can't he do this right? I've showed him enough times. He can plow a straight furrow and build a house to plumb, but he can't hang his clothes up properly. I'm surprised God didn't bop me on the head then and there. When I finally took time to listen instead of complain, he got my attention. Look at all the things he does well. There are so many, and he has put up with you all these years. Need I say more? No, Lord, enough said. Thank you for the reminder, and thank you for Hubby. My gentle husband loves me with all his heart. He is always telling me so. I often ask myself why. I certainly don't deserve him, but God knew I needed him. No one else would have put up with me for a day, let alone these long years. He often comes back to my sitting room, sits down in his rocker. Yes, he has his own special chair, and he will look at me and say, "Isn't it wonderful how God brought you all the way from Texas and gave you to me? I just think that's amazing, don't you?" Well, yes, that's just the way God works. He then tells me, "I pray that God will take me first, you know. I could never get along without you." About a year ago, my son and I were headed home from church. We were giving my grandson a ride. I gave him the front seat because, let's face it, he is a giant. He needed the leg room and he could visit with his uncle. We had just started on our way when he turned to me in the back seat and said, "Nana, I hope someday I find a girl who loves me as much as Papa loves you." I about swallowed my teeth. That's a profound statement coming from a then 16-year-old. It got me to thinking, do I appreciate this man God has blessed me with, or do I take him for granted? After all, we will be married 59 years this coming September. That's a long time to be together. It's easy to take one and each other for granted. We have had a good life together. God knew I needed a kind and gentle man. He has had to put up with an awful lot. He has stayed faithful through sickness and health, better and worse. There are long spaces of time when things were far worse than better. He has never raised his voice to me in anger. Me, I would blow like Mount St. Helens, and there would be ashes of regret all over the place. I would be continually asking for forgiveness. Sometimes, though, I just wanted to stay mad. It felt good. After all, I knew I was right. Ugly self always getting in the way. Sometimes I catch myself thinking of what might have been. Have you ever done that? God has shown me, though, how useless and wrong it is to think that way. Perhaps it might even be sinful for a child of God, because it shows a lack of trust and faith in the God who created us, the God who knows what's best for his children, the God who has a plan for each of our lives. For years, I had agonized over what might have been if only things had been different. This was an ongoing theme until I came to know God and understand that he had a plan all along. He had a purpose. Today, I can honestly say I am so thankful that those might have beens that I so desperately wanted didn't happen. I would have missed out on so many blessings. I shudder to think of it. In my old age, God has been teaching me lessons I should have learned as a young wife. Sadly, I didn't. Neither of us had a personal relationship with God and didn't know his word. In those early years, hubby was so busy providing for our growing family that everything else was laid on my shoulders, shoulders that were never meant for such a heavy load. I never learned submission or how to honor my husband. Thankfully, God does not give up on his children. We are his workmanship, and he never leaves a job undone. Learn those lessons while you're young. It is so much harder when you're old. When Judy first started to teach on the names of God, Elroy was my favorite. I recognized at once that he was the one who had been with me from the beginning. He is the one who permeates Psalm 139, my favorite psalm. Then I became acquainted with Adonai, and something wonderful happened. Can life begin at 80? I would like to ask you a question. Don't answer out loud. Just answer in your hearts. Have you allowed Adonai to become your Lord and Master? Have you put your ear to the doorpost and suffered the pain of the all? Deuteronomy 15. Is his mark on you for all to see? If you have answered yes, then you now belong to another, and you no longer have rights of your own. Scary? Yes, but I have found it's the only true path to freedom. And the blessings? Well, I'm praying that you will find that out for yourselves. God has done some great and mighty things in my life once I stepped out in obedience. I did not expect things to change as they have, beauty out of ashes. I'm still amazed, but I shouldn't be. Is he not the God of the impossible? Is everything perfect now? Oh, dear ladies, the volcano still rumbles and hiccups a few ashes now and then. I still struggle with sin, missing the mark daily. There are mornings when I could so easily slip into depression, ruining the day for myself and those around me. But I have come to recognize early on what is happening and submit to God so the enemy doesn't get a foothold. Does this mean that every day is filled with cheerfulness and joy? No. I have rough days when I'm down and blue. Who doesn't? But we can count on this one sure thing. His mercies are new every morning. God has blessed me beyond measure. He has given me a kind and loving husband, 6 handsome sons, 2 beautiful daughters, 25 grandchildren, and 6 great-grandchildren. Except for the 5 years baby girl was away being a Navy wife, we have been surrounded by all of our children. 4 live in Forest Grove, 2 in Cornelius, 1 in Hillsboro, and 1 in our basement. Not a week goes by without someone popping in to check on the old folks. 4 of these children come to Athey Creek. Who knows? Maybe someday they all will, even hubby. God works in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. Remember not the former things, nor consider the things of old. Behold, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Isaiah 43.